We now have item five, which is the racial justice priority, which is an update and also an opportunity for us to have conversation. I'm very grateful for the co-chairs of the racial justice priority group to be with us this evening to present with some of the team, to Monica and to Bishop Joanne. So I'm going to hand straight over to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back from coffee, and we're really grateful for your engagement with racial justice over the last year. It feels to me that there's a real willingness in the diocese to take racial justice seriously, to examine where we are as a church in terms of equality, diversity and inclusion, and to look at the witness that we offer to the world. That's why we have a racial justice priority within our 2030 vision. There is energy, there is commitment, and there is some progress. However, in society, there is also still hate crime, educational disparities, economic disparities, recruitment and employment inequalities, health inequalities, and criminal justice disparities. In church, there is still a lack of diversity and representation across leadership and governance structures. And we heard some elements of similarity in that in the LDBS report earlier from Penny, and we share some of those issues. And there is pain when the church does not represent or respond to issues of injustice. And perhaps there's also sometimes a lack of understanding about where power lies. And for me, these failings should grieve us, whether they take place inside or outside of the church. We keep coming back to Galatians 3, 28 to 29. There is no longer Jew or Greek, there is no longer slave or free, there is no longer male and female, for all of you are one in Christ Jesus. And if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to the promise. And also to Ephesians 2, 13 to 14. But now in Christ, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ, for he is our peace. This work matters because of who Jesus Christ is to us and because of the nature of the church that we are called to be.
I was particularly struck by the introduction by Bishop Graham Tomlin, until recently Bishop of Kensington. It was the introduction to his paper entitled Grace and Race, and this is amongst the papers circulated for today's meeting. It forms part of the 10-point action plan for parishes. Now, Bishop Graham says, let's be honest, many of us, though not all, in church have often felt in the past that questions of race and ethnicity are at best marginal, at worst a distraction from the gospel. When I did my initial theological training, he says, in the 1980s, I don't recall any particular discussion about race. It seemed like a special interest of a few people, and not something essential to think of or do anything about. Now, Bishop Graham goes on to say, questions around ethnic and cultural diversity are not marginal, but in fact take us to the heart of the gospel. So our aim in this evening's session is to update you on some of our work, work which is steered by the diocese's excellent racial justice priority group, and thanks to the members of that group and for their commitment and the expertise in this work. And also to invite you as diocesan synod members to think about how you can better understand the issues around racial justice and in your own way to be an ally of the change that we hope to see. So first we will hear from Bishop Joanne with an update on our work, and then from Georgina, who will raise our awareness of the hidden and structural nature of racism. And then from Amatu and Bishop Rob in the form of a dialogue towards anti-racism. And there will be time for your own reflection in small groups after that. So I'll hand over to you, Bishop Joanne.
Thank you. I'm actually presenting this part on behalf of Steph Ajayi, who is our racial justice priority consultant, capacity building consultant. Her dad died 2 days ago, and so she's gone to be with her family, and she asks that we keep her whole family in our prayers. It's a really difficult time for them. But she's been behind putting together the pack of reading, of information, of updates that you've been given along with your papers this evening. I'm not going to talk through those page by page, we'd be here all night, but I really want to point out just a few things that might help you to kind of develop your own reading and understanding from that. And the first thing is the racial justice priority pages on the diocesan website. They're kept really well up to date, and they contain a mixture of strategy points, background research, stuff about the racial justice priority group, so you know who you can talk to if you want to raise an issue, as well as some current news items and some other resources. So do keep an eye on it. The other thing to say is that we also have a racial justice prayer network, and we set aside the 22nd of each month as a special day of prayer when, as a group and others as a network, are committed to praying for racial justice across London. If you want to sign up for that, if you haven't already, Monica is the sort of life force behind that, which is wonderful. So do follow the link on our website pages or contact Monica. And the third thing to draw attention to you is Bishop Luce's interview with Anna Paulson, and also the article about how UKME and Global Majority Heritage clergy feel about their place in the Church of England. In different ways, they show us how far we've come, but also how far we still have to go. When we talk about racial justice, we're talking about our church community. We're talking about our brothers and sisters together, us. And if one part of the body is hurting, then the whole body hurts, and the whole body must be concerned about how to act differently and how to witness that. So Georgina's going to come up and give us a bit of a broader perspective on some aspects of structural issues around injustice and racism. And then we'll move on to the interview with Amatu and Bishop Rob. Georgina, thank you.
Thank you, Bishop Joanne. It seems to me that these days, when we speak about issues of social and racial justice, we can be accused of being woke. Now, Merriam-Webster defines the word woke as aware of and actively attentive to important societal facts and issues, especially issues of racial and social justice. So by my reckoning, we should be woke. And in Revelation 3:2, we read, "Wake up, strengthen what remains and is about to die. But I have found your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God." Sometimes it's hard to discern the complexities that lead to the racist outcomes we see on these slides to follow. But I hope that they show hidden and structural nature of what we are facing. This slide, as you can see, is employment rates by ethnic groups. So we have chosen three examples of structural issues that impact all of our lives, but where we can also see huge disparities due to race. And then these are areas where we all have aspirations, such as employment and health. The Health Inequalities Action Group, a multi-faith initiative led by the Bishop of London, recently published a very sobering report. These statistics that you can see are related to COVID. However, one of the very sobering facts in that report was that black women are 4 times as likely to die in pregnancy and childbirth as white women. This has got to be sobering. This has got to be something that concerns all of us. And we know that there are layers of complexity. This next slide is about criminal justice. And as you can see, the report found that for every 100 white women who were sentenced for drug offences, 227 black women were sentenced to custody. When we consider the removal of, in many cases, the primary caregiver, and the impact on children. We can then link into the school to prison pathway, and not least the issues that Penny spoke about earlier. So we do have to care. We do have to be woke. So I ask you all to be awake. The figures speak for themselves. They speak to your minds. But we also need to speak into our hearts. We are the body of Christ. And each part of the body is as important as the other.
Bishop Rob and Amatu are now going to come and have a dialogue on the theme of working towards anti-racism.
Thank you, Bishop Jan. Bishop Rob. It's well known that you appointed a director of mission and racial justice. And among other my colleagues, that's the only one with that extra portfolio of racial justice. Why is anti-racism important to you?
If I can, just over a couple of minutes, I want to share something deeply personal with you in terms of response as to why anti-racism is important to us. This has been something which has grown over time. Okay. It's coming to the acknowledgement, the really clear acknowledgement that racism exists amongst us. Absolutely clear. And racism is about a power dynamic and how power is viewed. And so when you recognise and you come to the conclusion, as I have done over time, that racism exists, it means that it requires action if it's about a power dynamic. And I recognise upon my reflections that actually I am part of the problem as a white middle-class man in a position of leadership. So therefore, in order for this to be dealt with, actually I have to change. How I act has to change. So this has been a journey. I remember vividly being really struck by Bishop Adrian when I was the area dean of Hackney, that Bishop Adrian insisted in his episcopal area that no interview panel should be all white or all male. And I thought, well, that's a good idea. I'll introduce that in Edmonton. But it was a tick box exercise, if I'm really honest. And there are three particular processes which I've been through which have brought me to a different conclusion. Number one, when I first started as the bishop, some of you may remember, I embarked on a 9-month listening exercise in the area where I dared to listen to a variety of different voices. And what came through very clearly from speaking to members of parliament, those in positions of responsibility beyond the church, when they looked at us from the outside, they shared examples of racism. And also when I listened to particularly our black members of the congregations within the Episcopal area, I also listened to experiences and examples of racism. So it's taking place from within. The second thing as to why anti-racism is important to me is I then listened to those who are on the receiving end of our ministry, particularly in terms of crisis. And this is quite uncomfortable for me to share this, because actually, as a 20-year-long parish priest in this diocese before I became a bishop in this diocese, I thought I did a pretty good job. But it's when I listen to people's experience, not necessarily of my ministry, but our collective ministry, that I realise that actually we do need to change. There was a really powerful report called the TIP report, which Power the Fight released some years ago, Therapeutic Intervention for Peace report. And this report took really seriously, listened to the experiences, particularly of parents who had gone through a major crisis. Black parents who had gone through a moment of major crisis, quite often involving someone being stabbed or something of that ilk. And I say that as someone who took 2 or 3 funerals a year when I was the parish priest of Hackney, which involved black children being stabbed on our estates. Listening to their experiences, I realised that the ministry which I was offering, and I offered it because I was the rector and I was in charge, But I offered that ministry, and actually, in many ways, the ministry was culturally incompetent. That's my reflection from having listened to the findings of that therapeutic report. And then there's also the listening to the experts. There is a whole body of evidence now which makes it abundantly clear that structural racism is rife. I remember Georgina helping me enormously before being on a panel about why was it that people of colour, to use the expression that was used then, affected, or COVID affected, particularly people of colour more than the, you know, in terms of response. And on this particular panel, listening to Elizabeth Henry, listening to Ben Lindsay, listening to Robert Beckford and others who are extraordinary prophetic voices in our midst amongst us, you realise again actions need to take place. And this is what Elizabeth Henry said on that night. You may have followed it on the webinar. She said, there's something deeply perverse in expecting those who are oppressed and or excluded to be the architects of eliminating their oppression and or exclusion. They're really striking words as a reminder to me that I was part of the problem. That is why anti-racism training is of huge importance. And I've got to that conclusion because I've listened to the experts, I've listened to the local communities who have been affected by our ministry, and I've listened to the further experiences of those who have been at the receiving end of our racism.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robb. I think you've answered my second question, what steps you've been taking personally to where you are. So I'm going to go to my last question at the moment. What have you lost? And I do remember writing up the job description for the role of Director of Mission and Racial Justice. And one of the things he said to me was, hold up the mirror, challenge me. So what have you lost and what have you gained in the process?
Thank you. I mean, that challenge is really important. I've engaged the work of a race mentor, a woman called Rachel Clark, who advises institutions on anti-racism training. Rachel Clark is Betty Campbell's granddaughter, so it's there right in the heart of her family life, if you know who Betty Campbell is. And what it's meant is a different mindset in terms of how you come to issues when they bubble up. So actually, it's made me really question as to when it's right for me to take action, or whether it's right when it's right for a member of the team to respond in a culturally competent way. That's one issue. It means I'm not always I am responsible, that's really clear, but I don't always have to be the person who steps in and tries to sort things out, because actually that can make issues worse by us doing that, because we feel as if we need to be the person who is in charge. It made this really much more part of our agenda in the Episcopal Area. Some of you will realise in the Edmonton area, we had a year-long programme of anti-racism training amongst our clergy, which led us to a clergy conference for 3 days to help us focus upon the racial justice priority in terms of Vision 2030 for every Londoner. And at that, we brought in again experts to help us kind of respond in terms of that as an Episcopal area. So Dr. Harvey Kiwani was part of us, Archbishop Tarbo, the Archbishop of Cape Town, Dr. Selina Stone, all helping to shape our reflections and give us space to have an adult conversation about how we respond to these particular issues. And I have to say that creating space and creating a Martyrs appointment and putting a marker down about the importance of this particular issue, what we found is all sorts of issues now bubbling up from the parishes, because people feel as if we're taking the issue seriously, which provides a platform for issues to then come forward. And you begin to recognise what it is you're dealing with, because you create safe space for people to be able to share what's deeply going on within.
Thank you very much. So, I do remember at the end of the conference you posed a question to your clergy. What was that question again?
It was, so what? It was, so what? And that's the place where we've left it. It's about clergy thinking through the implications. If we are part of the problem, then also we're part of the solution. And that's the framework with which we are now working.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. And we're going to continue in that vein with that question along the lines of, you know, why? Why does this matter? And I invite you to therefore form into small groups of maybe three or four people. Move the chairs a little if you want to. And this is just for the next, I think we've got 7 minutes, and we're going to keep you strictly to time. And to answer three questions, which I think we may have, do we have a slide? They're on the agenda. Why should racial justice matter to you? Why is it important that we strive for racial justice within our church communities? And what one thing can you commit to doing personally? And we'll have a little bit of time for feedback. So not feedback on all the papers we've given you or the bigger issues of racial justice, but really on those questions. Why does it matter? Why does it matter to the church? And what one thing can you commit to? And so if you hear a really great idea in your group that someone else has said, do offer it back in for all of our learning after that. So in 7 minutes' time at 7:50, we'll come back for a very brief plenary. Thank you. So if you could turn back this way. So I'm inviting you to reflect back the really great thing that you heard your conversation partners say. So any particular gems, moments of wisdom, revelation, points of learning that you heard expressed around you, if you feel that the wider group would benefit from hearing from those, do put your hand up and we'll take a couple at once and the microphones will come round. We've only got a couple of minutes, so if you could be concise, that would be really helpful. Wisdom in the room, over there.
I think it's Sarah then Amartu.
Sarah, Tech Kensington. I was talking to Sally, who's in Hounslow and has a very multicultural context. I think 17 languages on their PCC. What they've done is they've appointed a racial justice advocate, because even though they are diverse, they've still got to make sure that they're listening to each other across all that diversity. Do you want to say any
more? Thank you, Sarah and Sally. Amartu.
We are just talking about intentionality and unintentionality. Yeah. And sometimes in the work that I do now, I see that some behaviors and racial discrimination are unintentional. And so how do we navigate around unintentionality so that we can be fishing in the right places? Yeah. And I think it was Harvey Kriani who talked about enlightenment. So if you bring in German, English, and Igbo man like me in one room and ask the same question, one single question, the approach to those questions will be vary. Mm-hmm. So we need to be culturally competent in order to find out, to be sure that we are beginning to see and hear each other's voices in the context in which we exist.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that starts from a vulnerability about what, you know, appreciating that there are things that we don't know and that we will need others to help teach us. Two more comments I think we've got time for. Any hands going up with wisdom from your groups? Georgina can see someone who's... whose hand I've seen. Yeah, just there.
Thank you. Just to pick up on what Amartya's been talking about... I'm a magistrate, and we have a really excellent training module, which is very lengthy, which enables us to understand intercultural communication. You'll appreciate that magistrates deal with a vast range of people from different backgrounds. And the way in which you ask questions of some people needs to be different for the way you ask other people. There is the teaching enables you to understand how people from different cultures hear questions, how they want to answer questions, how they feel about being heard or not being heard. There's a great deal of work that can be done in understanding intercultural communication, and I'd strongly recommend that such teaching is somehow brought about within the church as well, because this is very court specific, so I wouldn't recommend listening to this, but the principles behind it could be really useful for intercultural communication training within the diocese.
Thank you for that. So some steps towards deeper and better understanding. Thank you very much. I think we may be out of time, so I will stop there if I may. Thank you, Bishop Sarah.
Thank you very much. Can you join with me to thank the Racial Justice Priority Group?